Weeks before, the three ships, Revenge, Sprite, and Arcturus, had sailed out of Nativity Bay on the dawn tide. They left Tazuz in his little felucca within sight of the bluff to watch for the arrival of Zane's fleet, while they went on to lie in ambush out of sight of land below the eastern horizon. The endless days that followed were of unrelieved monotony and uncertainty, patrolling back and forth along the edge of the oceanic shelf, watching for Tazuz to summon them to battle. Ruby Cornish in the Arcturus made his sunshot at noon each day, but the instincts of Kumra and the Sprite and Batula in the Revenge were almost as accurate as his navigational instruments at keeping them on their station. Mansur spent almost all the hours of daylight high in Arcturus's maintop, watching the horizon through the lens of his telescope until his right eye was bloodshot with the strain and the glare of the sun off the water. Each evening, after an early dinner with Cornish, he went to Verity's cabin. He sat late at her writing bureau. She had given him the key to the drawers when they parted on the beach of Nativity Bay. "No one else has ever read my journals. I wrote them in Arabic, so that neither my father nor my mother could decipher them. You see, my darling, I never trusted either of them very far." She laughed as she said it. "I want you to be the first to read them. Through them, you will be able to share my life and my innermost thoughts and secrets." "I feel humble that you should do me such a great honour," his voice choked as he said it. "It's not about honour, it's about love," she replied. "From now onwards, I shall never keep a secret from you." Mansur found that the journals spanned the last 10 years of her life, since she had turned 9. They were a monumental record of a young girl's emotions as she groped her way towards womanhood. He sat late each night, and by the light of the oil lamp he shared her yearnings and her bewilderment at life, her girlish disasters and petty triumphs. There were outpourings of joy, and others of such poignancy that his heart ached for her. There were dark, enigmatic passages when she pondered the relationship with her parents. He felt his flesh creep when she hinted fearfully at the unspeakable as she wrote of her father. She spared no detail when she described the punishments he had inflicted on her, and his hands shook with anger as he turned the perfumed pages. There were other passages that brought him up short with their brilliant revelations. Always her fresh, inspired use of words amazed him. At times she made him laugh aloud, and at others his vision blurred with tears. The last pages of the penultimate volume covered the period from their first meeting on the deck of the Arcturus in Muscat Harbour until their parting on the road back from Iskandarabad. At one point she had written of him, "Though he does not yet know it, already he owns a part of me. From this time onwards our footsteps will be printed side by side in the sands of time." When at last she had burnt out his emotions with her words, he blew out the lamp and went dazed with emotional exhaustion to her bunk. The rich fragrance of her hair still lingered on her pillow, and the sheets were perfumed by her skin. In the night he woke and reached for her, and when he realized that she was not there, the agony made him groan. Then he hated his own father for not allowing her to stay with him, and sending her away in the wagons with Sarah, Louisa, and little George into the wild hills of the hinterland. No matter how little he had slept, he was always on Arcturus's deck when 8 bells sounded in the middle watch, and before the first blush of dawn he was at the masthead, watching and waiting. As the most powerful but slowest ship in the squadron, the Arcturus kept the windward station, and Mansur had the sharpest pair of eyes on board. It was he who spotted the tiny fleck of the felucca's sail as she came up over the horizon. The moment that they were certain of her identity, Ruby Cornish brought the Arcturus about, and they ran down to intercept her. Tazuz answered his hail. "Zayn al-Din is here, with 25 great dhows." Then he turned and led the squadron back towards the African mainland, which now lay low on the horizon, dark blue, and as menacing as some monster of the deep. Again it was Mansur who first picked out the shapes of the enemy flotilla anchored off the mouth of the Umgeni River. Their sails were furled, and their dark hulls blended with the background of hills and forest. "They are lying exactly where your father expected them," Cornish studied them carefully as they raced down upon them. "They're already sending their boats into the beach. The attack has begun." Swiftly they closed the gap, and it seemed that the enemy were so intent on their landing that they were neglecting the watch they should have kept on the open sea behind them. "Those are the 5 war dhows of the escort," Mansur pointed them out. "The others are transports." "We have the weather gauge," Cornish smiled comfortably, and his face glowed with satisfaction. "The same wind that blows to our advantage has them pinned against the lee shore. If they hoist their anchors, they'll go aground almost immediately. We have Kadim ibn Abu Bakr at our mercy. How should we proceed, Your Highness?" Cornish looked at Mansur. Dorian had given his son the overall command of the squadron. Mansur's royal rank dictated that. The Arab captains would not have understood or accepted any other in place of him. "My instinct is to go straight at the war dhows while we have them at our mercy. If we can destroy them, the transports will fall into our laps like overripe fruit. Would you agree, Captain Cornish?"
"With all my heart, Your Highness."
Cornish showed his appreciation of Mansur's tact by touching the brim of his hat. "Then, if you please, let us close with the other ships, so that I may pass the order to them. I shall allot an enemy ship to each. We in the Arcturus will engage the largest of them." Mansur pointed to the dhow in the centre of the line of anchored ships. "For that is almost certainly commanded by Kadim ibn Abu Bakr. I shall board immediately and capture it, while you sail on and do the same to the next in line." The Sprite and the Revenge were sailing a little ahead, backing their sails slightly so as not to head-reach too far on the Arcturus. Mansur hailed them and pointed out which of the dhows were their separate targets. As soon as they understood what he wanted of them, they barged ahead, charging at the line of anchored ships. At last the enemy saw them coming, and confusion spread swiftly through their fleet. 3 of the transports were occupied with landing the horses they were carrying. They were winching them out of the holds with slings passed under their bellies, then lowering them over the side into the water. When they reached it, they turned them loose to swim unaided. The sailors, waiting for them in the small boats, drove them into the breaking surf to fight their way to the beach as best they were able. Already more than 100 of the sick, exhausted animals were in the water, struggling to keep afloat. When they saw the tall ships bearing down on them with all their guns run out, the captains of the horse transports panicked. With a few axe strokes, they severed their anchor cables and tried to bear away. 2 collided, and in the confusion they drifted into the line of heaving white surf. Still locked together, the waves broke over their decks. 1 capsized and took the other with it. The surface of the water was covered with wreckage, struggling men and horses. 1 or 2 of the other troop ships managed to cut their cables and hoist their sails. It was close work, but they cleared the lee shore and made good their offing. "They are unarmed and no danger to us," Mansur told Cornish. "Let them go. We can run them down later. First we must deal with the war dhows." He left Cornish and went forward to take command of the boarding party. The 5 war dhows had kept their positions at anchor. They were too large and ungainly to risk the dangerous manoeuvre of trying to clear the lee shore in the face of such a powerful enemy. They had no option but to stay and fight. The Arcturus ran straight at the largest. Mansur stood in the bows and surveyed the deck of the other ship as the gap between them closed. "There he is!" he shouted suddenly, and pointed with his sword. "I knew he must be here!" The ships were so close that Kadim heard his voice and glared back at him. The shaft of pure hatred that passed between them was almost tangible. "One broadside, Captain Cornish," Mansur looked back at the quarter-deck, "and we will board her over her bows through the smoke." Cornish waved acknowledgement and steered his ship in. The direction of the wind held Kadem's dhow with her bows pointing out to sea, her stern towards the beach. Although the Omani crew ran out their guns defiantly, they could not bring them to bear. Cornish crossed the bows of Kadem's dhow to rake her at point-blank range. The Arcturus stood higher out of the water than the dhow, and her guns were able to fire down on her. Cornish had loaded with grape shot, and the broadside crashed out. thick bank of grey gunsmoke shot through with lumps of burning wadding, billowed out and obscured her open deck. The wind blew it aside and revealed a scene of utter devastation. The timbers of the dhow's deck had been ripped as though by the claws of a monstrous cat. The gunners were piled in bloody heaps upon their unfired weapons. The splintered scuppers ran crimson with their blood. Mansair looked for Cadam in the carnage. With a small jolt of disbelief, he saw that he was unharmed and still on his feet, trying to muster the stunned survivors of that terrible blast of iron balls. Skillfully, Cornish let the hulls of the two ships kiss, then held them together with a delicate play on the helm. Mansair led his boarders across in a rush, and Cornish toyed with the wheel and disengaged. Leaving Mansair and his men to seize the dhow, he sailed on down the line of anchored ships to attack the next war dhow before it could escape out to sea. He had a respite of a few minutes to look around and see how the other two ships were faring. After battering them with unrelenting broadsides at close range, the crews of the Revenge and the Sprite had boarded their chosen adversaries. Three more of the troop transports had drifted into the surf and capsized. Some of the others were still at anchor. Cornish counted six more who had avoided the attackers and were clawing desperately out to sea. Then he looked back over his stern and saw the bitter fighting that surged over the deck of Cadam's anchored dhow. He thought he saw Mansair in the front of the battle, but it was so fluid and confused that he could not be sure. The prince might have done better to let me give them a few more doses of grape before he boarded, he thought, and then with admiration, but he is a hot blood. Cadam ibn Abu Bakr murdered his mother. Honour allows him no other course than to go after him, man to man. The Arcturus was coming down fast on the next war dhow in the line, and Cornish gave her all his attention. "The same medicine, lads," he called to his gunners. "A goodly draught of the grape, and then we will board her."